Ladies and gentlemen, why don't we go ahead and get started? My name is Richard Bush. I'm the director of the Center for Northeast Asian Policy Studies here at Brookings. And it's my great honor to convene the fourth session of the Seoul Washington Forum. This is a venture that was suggested to Brookings by the Korea Foundation a number of years ago. And we responded with enthusiasm, and the result has been an outstanding collaboration between the Brookings Institution and the Korea Foundation. I'd like to acknowledge Ambassador Yim, the former president of the Korea Foundation, who made a lot of contributions to the success of the forum so far. And I would like to acknowledge Ambassador Kim Sung-yup, who's now the acting president of the Korea Foundation, for his support as well. This forum could not occur without the strong encouragement and support of the Korea Foundation. This year, we are emphasizing global themes more, the 21st century themes, but we can't avoid 20th century subjects as well, specifically North Korea. And I have to confess, we did not know when we picked this date that Kim Jong-il would be arriving in China, or that even that the tragic Cheonan incident would have occurred to create a little bit more interest. I'm very sorry that for the tragic loss of life in that incident. I think all Americans are. But that we should also look forward to the 21st century, and we, with so many good friends and colleagues from the Republic of Korea, that's what we intend to do today. At this point, I would like to call on Ambassador Kim to make a few remarks and help me start today's forum. Thank you.
Dr. Richard Bush, Honorable Park Ji-hyun, Honorable Park San-hyun, distinguished participants and guests, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the Korea Foundation, it's my great honor to be in your eminent company and to be welcoming you at the 4th Seoul Washington Forum. The Korea Foundation hosts a series of bilateral and regional forums every year. But the Seoul Washington Forum is certainly the most prominent of these forums. Over the years, it has served to provide an open and honest venue to discuss important issues regarding the alliance and security, trade and FTA issues for a better relationship between Korea and the United States. I also believe that this forum has played an essential role in building and strengthening invaluable human networks and communication channels between the most important experts from both countries. In this forum, we put on the table some significant issues for in-depth discussion and exchange of views. As most of you might be aware, during the night of March 26, the 1,200-ton corvette Cheonan was caused to sink by a massive explosion. 40 sailors were found dead, with 6 sailors still missing and presumed dead near the 10th Western in the Korean maritime border. The entire Korean nation is mourning their loss, and I would like to use this opportunity to express my sincere and deepest condolences to all who sacrificed their lives in the tragic incident. While we are still in the process of examining this disaster, we certainly cannot exclude the possibility of North Korean involvement, particularly given the investigators' unofficial interim report that the Cheonam was ripped in half due to an external explosion that took place across the ship. Although we still have to wait for decisive evidence on who or what was behind the incident, we already consider a grave national security threat requiring the closest possible collaboration between Korea and the United States. In this light, I believe security cooperation between our two nations should be an intense focus of discussion in this forum. Also of critical importance is the cooperation between Korea and the United States over shaping new forms of global governance till the currently unfolding global financial crisis. It's becoming increasingly clear that the global financial system that we maintained since the second half of the last century is in need of serious reform. This year in November, as you know, Korea will be hosting G20 summit in Seoul and as a chair country. Korea will have to take the initiative in formulating institutional measures to navigate through the sea of the challenging global and regional issues. The Korean government has repeatedly made clear its intent and capacity to enhance its global role in keeping with its economic status. We are still not entirely sure of what the newly emerging governance on both global and regional levels should look like. But it is quite clear that Seoul and Washington should work together in coping with global issues as well as issues in the Northeast Asian region. Korea-U.S. cooperation in this realm again will be high on the agenda on this forum. I can confidently say that the Korea-U.S. alliance is the bedrock of Korea's foreign and defense policy. Korea will always strive to work closely with the United States and cooperate on matters of peace, prosperity, and security on the peninsula in the Northeast Asian region and the world. And I'm sure that most of us gathered here today agree on this view. In closing, I'd like to thank Dr. Bush and commend the Brookings Institution for its good work in organizing this forum. I look forward to participating in this forum and to the lively and important discussions that we will have here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Kim. It's now my great honor to call upon National Assemblyman Park Jin to give a keynote address. Mr. Park is the chairman of Foreign Affairs, Trade, and Unification Committee of the National Assembly. We're very pleased that he could come all this way to join our discussions and address the forum. Assemblyman Park.
Well, good afternoon. Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Park Jin. I'm chairman of Foreign Affairs, Trade, and Unification Committee of the Korean National Assembly. I would like to thank Mr. Strobe Talbot, president of the Brookings Institution, and Dr. Richard Bush III of the Institution's Center for Northeast Asian Policy Studies for hosting the 4th Seoul Washington Forum today. I'm also grateful to Ambassador Kim Sung-yup, Acting President of the Korea Foundation, and also Ambassador Im Song-jun, who is present today. We have distinguished scholars from Korea at this forum, including Professor Ha Young-sun, Professor Chun Jae-sung, Professor Lee Sung-ju, Professor Kim Sung-han, and many others. And also my colleague from the Korean National Assembly, Madame Park Sun-young from the Liberty Forward Party, is gracefully present here today. It is a great pleasure to see all of you at this conference. This year marks the 60th anniversary of the outbreak of the Korean War. Korea would not exist today as it is today without the help extended by the 16 countries, including the United States, when the war broke out. The U.S. is the only alliance to Korea and the staunchest ally. Taking this opportunity, I would like to express my gratitude on behalf of Korea's National Assembly to the Brookings Institution for its efforts to advance the Korea-U.S. alliance. President Lee Myung-bak and President Obama have held summits several times since the inception of their administrations, respectively, solidifying their trust and friendship continuously. The opinion poll conducted last February by Munhwa Ilbo in Korea shows that the public perception of Korea-U.S. alliance has shifted from uncomfortable to amicable since President Lee took office. President Lee expressed his deepest gratitude for the American soldiers' sacrifice and dedication during the Korean War when he recently visited the Korean War Memorial in Washington, D.C., and that attitude is what most Koreans have towards American soldiers. I believe that Korea and the U.S. became closer and will get even closer in the future with our true friendship. I'm convinced that our deep friendship is a result of the valuable advice and policy suggestions that experts like you have offered through academic research to the advancement of our bilateral relations, as well as of the efforts made by both of our governments. Under these circumstances, I find it meaningful and timely for us to hold today's seminar. Lately, circumstances on the Korean Peninsula are like walking on thin ice. I think that inter-Korean relations will determine its direction after we identify what caused the Navy frigate Cheonan to split into two parts and sink in the Yellow Sea, just miles below the northern limit line on March 26. All citizens of the Republic of Korea are grieving for 46 young and brave fallen seamen of their sacrifices. As a retired naval officer myself, I was shocked and could not suppress my anger at this unprecedented tragic incident. At the moment, Korean government is working to find the cause in an objective and scientific manner. Seoul will have to take decisive measures according to the results of the investigation. Currently, investigators have pointed to an external underwater blast and possibly a torpedo attack as the likely cause of the sudden breaking apart and sinking of the Cheonan Navy ship. The public opinion poll carried out by Gallup Korea on April 24th indicates that 62.6% of the respondents in Seoul and the metropolitan area believe that North Korea was involved in the sinking of the Cheonan. South Korean Navy, as you may know, has been engaged in a series of naval skirmishes with North Korea in the Yellow Sea during the last decade or so, overpowering the North, who then made repeated warnings of retaliation. North Korea has claimed, and is still claiming, that it had nothing to do with the ship sinking. If, however, North Korea's involvement is confirmed through an objective and scientific investigation, this would be a grave national security issue and could be a frontal challenge to the combined defense posture of Korea and the United States. North Korea will have to be held accountable in accordance with the Armistice Agreement, the Inter-Korean Basic Agreement, and the UN Charter. If North Korea has been involved, this is simply not just a surprise attack on the Navy corvette, but it should be considered as a surprise attack on the Republic of Korea and national leadership. Under the national security crisis, both our military and Korea-U.S. alliance should be working properly. Korea and the U.S. are cooperating closely to handle the recent disaster in the Yellow Sea. Experts from not only the United States, but from the U.K., Australia, and the neutral nation Sweden are working together to determine what tore the Navy frigate in half and sank the Cheonan. After the results of the investigations come out, the Korean government will convey the results to China and Russia, two members of the UN Security Council, as well as the U.S. and Japan. The Cheonan incident not only highlights the volatility of the security environment of the Korean Peninsula, but also reflects the sensitivity of the existing geopolitical balance in the region. China has an important role to play under the current circumstances. China supports North Korea as an ally, but does not support North Korea's provocative actions to disturb the status quo on the Korean Peninsula. I understand that the U.S. government has explained its position with regard to the sinking of the Cheonan to China and asked China to take due responsibility with regards to the incident. It is encouraging news that China has acknowledged the course of action that Korea and the U.S. take, which is to identify the cause of the sinking first and turn to the six-party talks afterwards. South Korea, as well as the United States, needs to hold a strategic dialogue with China on crucial matters related to North Korea. During the recent Korea-China summit at Shanghai, President Lee Myung-bak has told President Hu Jintao that China will be informed as soon as the results come out. And as China and Korea hold strategic cooperative partnership, we expect Chinese support once the result is out. That's what President Lee mentioned. If China is to play a significant role along with the U.S. in establishing peace and security in Northeast Asia, China should not turn a blind eye to the challenges that jeopardize the peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula. China's participation in the UN Security Council sanctions on North Korea after its nuclear test evidences China's growing concerns over North Korea. The reported visit by Chairman Kim Jong-il to China is occurring at a very sensitive timing in the aftermath of the Cheonan incident. It is important that China plays a constructive and cooperative role in deterring and sanctioning North Korea by the international community if the North is proved responsible for such an aggressive behavior. China should not send any wrong message to North Korea, especially this time. All of us have keen interest in what is going on in North Korea. Faced with economic stagnation and political suppression, human rights conditions have become apparently serious in the North. The leadership, however, is fixated on military strength and military loyalty. We are not perfectly sure about the internal situation of the reclusive country, but what is obvious is that North Korean leader Kim Jong-il is trying to strengthen the military-first policy to consolidate internal control and ideological grip while coping with the fallout of the failed economic currency reform that was recently attempted, along with the process of transferring power to his chosen hereditary successor. Kim Jong-il this year inspected tank drills in a virtual exercise of attacking South Korea, set up and strengthened the General Bureau of Reconnaissance. An artillery drill was also staged against South Korea below the northern limit line in the Yellow Sea. After the tragic incident of the Chunnan, Kim Jong-il promoted 100 military leaders and paid a visit to encourage the Bureau of Reconnaissance on the foundation day of the North Korean People's Army as part of his military first policy. Pyongyang also pushed forward the freezing of South Korea's assets in the Mount Kumgang Resort, including the Family Reunion Center. These hardline moves seem to be part of brinkmanship tactics that Pyongyang has relied on to show off its military muscle at home and abroad, put pressure on South Korea, and gain more concessions from the U.S. in the future negotiations on nuclear issue and peace treaty. The North Korean nuclear issue remains at a standstill. While developing nuclear weapons, the North declared itself as a nuclear state. Its claim, however, deepens economic hardship in the North and isolates the country from the international community. Pyongyang should choose to reform its system and open its doors to the world, as well as give up its nuclear ambitions in order to address its severe economic difficulties. The sunken Navy ship has also sunken the six-party talks for the moment. North Korea may choose to return to the six-party talks if it ever can be resumed. But before that, the Chunnan incident has to be addressed first by the parties concerned based on the result of investigation on the causation and the responsibility. Korea's hosting of the next nuclear security summit in 2012 itself delivers a strong message to urge North Korea to abandon its development of nuclear weapons and nuclear proliferation. A denuclearized North Korea is a prerequisite to the peace and security on the Korean Peninsula, and ultimately peaceful unification of two Koreas. Let me talk about the U.S. military bases in Japan and the Korean Peninsula. What is most important at this delicate moment is our efforts to show solidarity for the Korea-U.S. alliance. Strong security cooperation between our two countries will not only strengthen our combined defense capabilities and ensure a safe environment for the U.S. forces to be stationed in, but also act as a powerful deterrent against the North. The Korea-U.S. alliance, along with the U.S.-Japan alliance, is the fundamental foundation on which peace and stability of the peninsula and Northeast Asia are maintained, and the North Korean nuclear problems can be resolved. Korea and the United States are one of the staunchest allies that share common values, including free democracy, market economy, and respect for human rights. And this partnership will only grow in its importance. The U.S. military bases located in Okinawa are responsible for defending Japan and the Asia-Pacific region, and they also play a significant role in keeping the Korean Peninsula peaceful and safe. The U.S. Marines in Okinawa are obliged to defend Korea in contingency and to remove North Korea's weapons of mass destruction. Thus, the relocation of U.S. military bases in Japan would affect not only the U.S.-Japan relationship, but also security on the Korean Peninsula. The triangular security cooperation among Korea, U.S., and Japan, therefore, is essential for maintaining peace and security in the Korean Peninsula and Northeast Asia. Let me talk about operational control transfer. Successful advancement of the Korea-U.S. alliance requires us to carefully consider the transfer of wartime operational control, or OPCON. The circumstances around the peninsula and Northeast Asia have greatly changed since 2007, and this is why the leaders of our two nations should reconsider the transfer of OPCON seriously. North Korea conducted its second nuclear test, admitted that it had enriched uranium, and almost succeeded in test-launching ballistic missiles. The year 2012, when OPCON transfer and disintegration of the Combined Forces Command is scheduled, is also the year of presidential elections in Korea and the United States, respectively. With such political uncertainties, North Korea declared 2012 as the year of becoming a strong and prosperous state. In other words, the peninsula is at a critical crossroads in 2012. The relocation plan of U.S. military bases in Japan, as I mentioned, is now at a trap due to the domestic political situation of Japan. Furthermore, if it turns out that Pyongyang was involved in the Cheonan sinking, the transfer of OPCON, and the deactivation of the Combined Forces Command as scheduled in 2012 will meet with backlash and opposition from the public. According to a recent opinion poll conducted by Korea Institute for Defense Analysis, or KAIDA, on April 24th, 48.8% of the total respondents answered that given the growing security concern, the OPCON transfer should be delayed beyond year 2012, whereas only 35.8% supported the scheduled transfer in 2012. I think that this issue requires us to make flexible rescheduling by comprehensively reviewing the security and political situation in and around the Korean Peninsula. It is fair to say that the Korean Peninsula is facing serious challenges right now. I believe that what is most needed at this moment is unity. On the home front, Koreans need to be united more than ever. And on the external front, free and democratic countries of the world need to be united more than ever. We address the 60th anniversary of the outbreak of the Korean War this year. More than 37 young U.S. soldiers sacrificed their precious lives and shed their blood in Korea to defend Korea's freedom and peace, with more than 110,000 U.S. soldiers wounded. For the past 57 years, the Korea-U.S. alliance has made great contributions to peace and stability of the Korean Peninsula and Northeast Asia, and has continued to evolve in line with changes in international security environment. Korea and the U.S. have worked together, side by side, not only in the peninsula, but also in the Middle East, such as Iraq and Afghanistan, for peace and freedom. President Lee and President Obama have established a close cooperative relationship and held summit talks to make this alliance more forward-looking in order to keep up with the 21st century. Let me turn to the economic issue and address the Korea-U.S. FTA. To make this alliance more solid, the Korea-U.S. FTA should be ratified as soon as possible. The ratification is necessary for the alliance to become economically strong one as well. We need to pay our attention to the fact that the ratification of the KORUS FTA will provide us with a new window of opportunity to overcome the economic crisis we face, expand free trade, create more jobs, and help the U.S. regain its trusted leadership. Allowing the U.S. to forge a new economic alliance with vibrantly growing Korea in the Asian economy, the KORUS FTA will contribute to boosting trade and investment and creating employment in the U.S. While the Korea-U.S. FTA has not been ratified yet for domestic political reasons, major economies such as Europe, India, and China are emerging as new FTA partners to Korea. Trade representatives of Korea and the EU initialed a free trade pact last October, practically cutting a deal with the world's largest market, home to 500 million people in Europe. This deal will take effect after it is officially signed and approved by respective parliaments in Korea and the EU in Brussels. The Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement, or CEPA, between Korea and India was concluded last August, the first free trade agreement that Korea has signed with one of the BRICS nations, and came into effect from early this year, allowing Korea to make inroads to a huge emerging market with 1.2 billion people. Discussions about a potential FTA with China, home to 1.3 billion people and one of the G2 countries along with the U.S., have started in earnest. President Lee mentioned recently that the market situation is rapidly changing with China's dramatic economic growth, and that a free trade agreement between Korea and China should be considered as part of effective response to it. During the summit at Shanghai, the two leaders agreed to speed up the Korea-China FTA, and there is the possibility of starting the process as early as second half of this year. Korea's trade volume with China last year amounted to $168 billion, similar to those with Japan and the United States combined. Korea's investment in China stood at $44 billion, China being the largest investment destination of Korea. If these free trade deals with the EU and with China are finalized soon, the U.S. will have to lose out to them. The American Chamber of Commerce has recently released a research report that the effect of the Korea-U.S. FTA will be reduced if the ratification of the CORUS FTA is delayed and the Korea-EU FTA and Korea-China FTA take effect earlier than the CORUS FTA. The U.S. Congress and administration need to keep in mind that the economic benefits will be brought to Korea and the U.S. later than expected as long as the ratification is delayed, and that other strategic benefits will be lost other than economic ones. Let me turn to the G20 summit. Korea and the U.S. is also closely cooperating at G20 in order to overcome the global economic crisis and facilitate global rebalancing. As the host for the G20 in November, Korea, with U.S. cooperation, will seek for the solution and strategy to surmount the current global economic crisis and to prevent any recurrence. As being desperately a developing country not too long ago, Korea will act as a bridge between the advanced and developing countries based on our own experience of successful economic achievement. The current economic crisis has hit many parts of the world, certainly Korea, China, Japan, and other East Asian countries, and they are not exempted from the damage. However, Korean economy showed fast recovery as being the first to switch to an increasing growth among the OECD countries, which resulted in 7.8% growth rate in the first quarter. Despite the impact of the naval disaster, Moody's has recalibrated Korea's credit rating from A2 to A1, being upgraded, and S&P is said to be reviewing to upgrade Korea's rating as well. Korea's economic environment is now mature enough to start thinking of exit strategy. But Korea will coordinate policies with other G20 countries, including the U.S. and the European partners, to establish such a strategy. At the same time, the Troika of Northeast Asia, that is Korea, China, and Japan, need to pull together a political collaboration based on economic interdependence. This cooperation among Korea, China, and Japan will act as a momentum in working with ASEAN countries in order to create a new regional multilateralism and cooperative networks in East Asia. Also, there needs to be urgent steps to prevent local financial crises from southern European countries like Greece and Portugal lead to another global crisis. If G20 up till now focused on recovering the crisis, then this year's conference in Seoul following the Toronto meeting in June needs to focus on setting up a stabilized structure for post-crisis global economy, framework for strong, sustainable, and balanced growth, reform of the international financial institutions, and financial regulation reform are among the key issues. And we see the grave importance for coordination for the issues to reach an agreement. There are important additional agenda. Structural reform for global financial safety net must be strengthened so that a healthy economy does not face crisis due to the temporary lack of foreign currency liquidity. Furthermore, G20 should be on the front line in support to emerging and developing countries to create a poverty-reduced and prosperous world. I believe that the current global financial crisis has brought G20 conference as the premier form of the new governance to the global economy. For G20 to become an effective organization after the crisis is over, it is necessary to strengthen the organization and the similar steps of active institutionalization. Regarding the transforming global governance and the role of G20, I expect for an in-depth discussion during this forum today and tomorrow. Ladies and gentlemen, Korea has successfully transformed itself into what it is today with the U.S. help and Korean people's blood and sweat to rise from the ashes of the Korean War that broke out in 1950. The National Assembly of the Republic of Korea plans to propose a resolution to express our gratitude to countries, including the United States, that participated in the Korean War on the occasion of its 60th anniversary. As a divided, impoverished, and powerless country in the periphery of Asia, Korea has become one of the world's 10 largest economies, steering the G20 meeting where the global economy is discussed and handled. Although Korea produces no single drop of oil, it is now exporting energy in a form of advanced nuclear reactors to the Middle East. Late last year, Korea turned itself from a recipient country to a donor country in just 50 years with its accession to the Development Assistance Committee, or DAC, of the OECD. The Republic of Korea is working to promote global peace and prosperity at the center of the international stage in close cooperation with our trustworthy ally, the United States, who made such a huge sacrifice for us 60 years ago. Now is the time for Korea and the United States to make this strategic alliance stronger and forward-looking through active collaboration on such various fronts as sharing a new future vision, ratifying the CORUS FTA, cooperating for the global economic recovery and beyond, moving the world closer to nuclear security, denuclearizing North Korea, and unifying two Koreas peacefully. I hope that this important two-day forum will come up with specific and practical measures to promote peace and prosperity of the Asia-Pacific region and the world, as well as ideas to advance the Korea-U.S. alliance. And on behalf of the Korean National Assembly, once again, I thank all of you who are present here today and congratulate the opening of the 4th Seoul Washington Forum. Thank you for your attention. Thank you very much.